This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
This week, Massachusetts has found itself at the center of America's debate over illegal immigration. At issue is a federal program called Secure Communities, or SCOM. At its core, it's a simple notion. State and local police already send the fingerprints of everyone they arrest to the FBI. Under SCOM, though, the FBI would then send those prints along to ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. ICE then checks to see if the person who was arrested is here illegally, and if they are, well, from there, it gets a bit unclear.
Now, the Obama administration wants to take the program nationwide by 2013, and it wants states to cooperate. Governor Deval Patrick's administration went on a bit of a listening tour this year to hear opinions on whether the Commonwealth should sign on to the program. You can see footage from the highly contentious public meetings on YouTube. Here's a quick sampling, beginning with a case against secure communities.
We've been here before. Selma, Auschwitz, Rwanda, Darfur. Times when good people neglected to see, to listen, to speak, and to act from that sacred place called our collective soul.
How dare you desecrate the memory of those people who were victims of a systematic genocide and try to equate that to the enforcement of laws within this country.
Well, this week, Governor Deval Patrick decided Massachusetts should not participate in secure communities, making Massachusetts the third state, along with New York and Illinois, to reject the initiative. But it's not entirely clear if he has any choice in the matter. WBUR's Bianca Vasquez-Tonis is here to explain. Hi there, Bianca.
Hi, Meghna.
So, secure communities, is it optional or mandatory for states?
Well, what appears to be going on is that it might be optional for them to formally sign up, to sign the agreement, right? Maybe that it doesn't matter if they do or don't, because in 2013, what the feds are saying and what the state agrees with is that it's going to happen anyway. The feds are going to flip a switch and it's going to go live.
So it sounds like, Bianca, that in reality, as you're saying, it's this option to agree to something that's going to happen regardless. So there's nothing that state officials can actually do to stop the FBI from sharing information with ICE.
That appears to be the case. According to Curtis Wood, who's the Undersecretary of Public Safety for this state, who's been, you know, following this very closely, he says that the feds could actually do this right now. There's no way to stop it. Listen to him here.
The only real way to opt out of this program is to not fingerprint people. And the state will not stop fingerprinting people. We fingerprint people as part of our normal day-to-day operation to identify individuals and to determine their criminal history and their dangerousness and, you know, if they're wanted.
So it's not really clear why it is that they're actually asking for this agreement. That's one of the things that may have tripped up Governor Patrick and other states.
Okay, so in that case, if the agreement then that states are giving is essentially purely symbolic, does that make Governor Patrick's opposition also purely symbolic? I mean, what are the political dynamics here at play?
Well, it definitely seems like he is registering his disagreement with this program, the way it has been running. The fact that it is ending up in the deportation of a lot of people who haven't actually been convicted of crimes, you know, as far as he's concerned, doesn't meet the stated goal of the program. So that's one thing. Another thing is he believes that it will change before 2013. So why sign up now when it is flawed?
So, Bianca, it seems as if regarding secure communities, there are right now a lot of unknowns and much uncertainty about the program and about its rollout, especially here in Massachusetts. Is there anything that we actually do know about the initiative?
Well, we know that Boston's in the program, and that doesn't seem to be stopping, even though Deval Patrick has said he doesn't want to join statewide. We know that two counties want to sign up and are looking into it and are trying to find a way to do it without Deval Patrick's sign off on it. And we also know that there's a federal investigation that's going to start at Department of Homeland Security and ICE that looks at the actual rollout and the execution of this program.
In terms of who they're arresting and why?
Exactly.
WBUR's Bianca Vasquez-Tonis, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, listeners, so setting aside for just a moment the question of whether Massachusetts has any choice in the matter or not, what do you think about secure communities in general about this initiative. Should local law enforcement automatically share the information of everyone it arrests with federal immigration authorities? Proponents say it streamlines law enforcement and helps get perhaps dangerous people out of the country, but opponents say it's a very blunt instrument that could end up doing more harm than good. Massachusetts and the Secure Communities Initiative, that's today's talker, and we want to know what you think. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Well, joining us now is Jessica Vaughn. She's Director of Policy Studies at the Center for Immigration Studies. It's a research institute that examines the impact of immigration in the United States. It advocates, according to its own website, a low immigration but pro-immigrant vision. Jessica Vaughn, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks so much, Meghna.
It's great to have you. Also with us is Laura Rotolo. She is staff attorney for the ACLU of Massachusetts, which is obviously opposed to the Secure Communities Program. Laura Rotolo, welcome to you to Radio Boston.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Okay, well, why don't we just start, let's just dive right into the sort of the center of the debate over the merits and efficacy of the program. Jessica Vaughn, let me start with you. I mean, you I would guess that you are unhappy that Deval Patrick has said he's going to pull Massachusetts out of Secure Communities, because why do you think it's a program worth participating in?
Well, it's really too bad for all the people in the state who have to live in communities that are affected profoundly by the public safety problems that are associated with illegal immigration. I mean, every day there are dozens of illegal aliens who are arrested for other crimes in the state. And right now, state and local officers don't have any easy way to determine whether this person might be subject to removal. And ICE needs a way to easily identify what it considers its highest priority for enforcement, and that's people who are committing crimes. They can't station people in every jail or every police lockup, you know, kind of sitting around waiting for illegal aliens to come through the door. Secure Communities automates that whole process and brings ICE's attention on cases where people have been arrested. They look into them, they decide whether or not they're going to bring immigration charges, because not everybody is removable who's identified under Secure Communities, and people get their due process in immigration courts. They get the chance to argue for whether or not they should be removed, and then if appropriate, these people who've been identified because they've been arrested get sent home rather than being allowed to stay here and continue committing crimes.
So overall, you see it as a powerful streamlining tool between state and federal law enforcement authorities. Laura Rotolo, your thoughts on whether or not Massachusetts should or shouldn't be participating in Secure Communities?
Well, just to clear up one quick thing that Jessica just said, that in Boston and in Massachusetts as a whole, what she said about police is actually not true. They actually have a 24-hour access hotline where any police officer can call immigration and find out the immigration information of a person who is arrested. So that is already happening regardless of Secure Communities. And there are plenty of tools available both to the federal government and to local officials to deport people, and as evidenced by the record number of deportations that are happening right now. But what is happening in Boston, that we have seen, Boston signed up to be part of this program as a pilot program in 2008, is that it is really just driving people further underground, and it is creating a problem for public safety for everyone. So, for example, since 2008, Boston has sent over 45,000 fingerprints of arrestees from the area to immigration. This is anybody who gets, you know, picked up after a Bruins game, anybody who is driving without a license, mostly U.S. citizens. Their fingerprints are sent to immigration, and that makes everyone afraid.
But I suppose, I mean, people would say that since they're U.S. citizens, they have nothing to worry about anyway, Laura Rotolo.
You can say that except for the U.S. citizens who have been deported because of errors. So the larger the system gets, the more prone it is to have errors. And we've seen around the country people who were born in the United States mistakenly getting deported. So, you know, the more fingerprints and names we feed into this giant database, the more likely it is that a U.S. citizen can might actually be deported. Mm.
Jessica Vaughn, let's dive a little bit deeper into this issue about who exactly is falling under the secure community's net, if I can put it that way. I mean, it's been reported that at least here in Boston, some 54%, a little over half of the immigrants deported under the program actually had no criminal convictions, only civil violations. And only one in four of those actually deported from Boston had been convicted of a serious crime. And that serious crime issue is really the one that secure communities, as an initiative, said it's going after, to remove serious criminals who are also illegally here from the United States. So it seems like there's a lot of people who are being maybe unfairly deported under the program.
Well, there hasn't been anyone deported who wasn't actually removable. In other words, they were here illegally or they had such serious criminal violations that they have to forfeit their green card. And in fact, there is not a single innocent crime victim who's been removed as a result of secure communities. The reason that these there are people who have not been convicted of other crimes, but there are reasons for that. Some of these people have committed multiple minor crimes, and local prosecutors decide that it's just easier because of their crowded dockets to have ICE remove them than spend the money to prosecute them, even though, you know, they're a constant problem in the community. Hundreds of these individuals have immigration violations, and in most cases, multiple immigration violations, like they've been deported and come back, or they get arrested more than once, even as ICE is trying to remove them. So these are the typical cases that you're going to find under that category of so-called non-criminals. I mean, just because someone hasn't been convicted for, you know, being an axe murderer doesn't mean they should be allowed to remain here in defiance of immigration laws.
But at the same time, and Laura Rodel, I want to get your thought on this. I mean, I've been reading, for example, there are, for every person who's quote-unquote, you know, a serious criminal, there are a number of people who have come under the attention of ICE through the Secure Communities Program for simply just reporting a crime. And they, too, were put into the database. I mean, there's a story of, I believe, a woman named Isura Garcia, I'm reading, in Los Angeles, who dialed 911 to report domestic abuse by her partner, and then she ends up in deportation proceedings. Is that a common occurrence, Laura Rodolo?
That's exactly right. And Isaura Garcia is just one of several examples of people calling 911, especially women who are victims of violence. We're seeing that, you know, around the country where, and in Massachusetts, this happens too. If you call 911, you know, you're a victim of domestic violence, there is an altercation. Sometimes the police can't, you know, can't figure out who's the victim and who's the perpetrator. So everyone winds up going to jail, and all of a sudden victims are getting put into these deportation proceedings. There was another woman named Maria Magdalena Pérez Rivera, who, you know, had a two-year-old child and a three-month-old son, who, you know, also called when her boyfriend was beating her and was put into deportation proceedings. And, you know, these are individual cases that are really striking, but in the larger picture is that it's making people afraid to report crimes to the police.
And Jessica Vaughn, what do you have to say to that? Because I know you said earlier that because this is a tool that helps law enforcement and public safety, there's the flip side, as Laura Rodolo is bringing, that maybe some people see that it is an impeding to public safety.
Right. I have a couple things to say about that. One specifically on at least the second case that Laura mentioned. That woman also had been arrested for committing a crime herself. So it's not just that she called to report a crime, you know, that her husband was beating her. She had, you know, legitimate criminal charges on her also, and she was here illegally, and she's not being detained and has not been removed yet. So I think it's important to keep that in perspective. Also, I mean, there's really no evidence anywhere in the country that immigration enforcement programs like this that involve information sharing between local and federal agencies causes crime reporting to be suppressed. I mean, certainly if you look at the crime reporting statistics in the city of Boston, what you find is that more crime reporting rates have actually gone up over the last few years, and in every precinct, even those that are heavily immigrant. So if this so-called chilling effect is actually happening, I mean, there's just no evidence of that anyway. What law enforcement agencies find is that these programs, if they're properly explained, in fact, enhance relationships with immigrant communities, because people who are living in the community don't need know that they don't need to fear people who are trying to take advantage of them, you know, in their neighborhoods. If you talk to police chiefs like Chief O'Loughlin in Milford, he, you know, says that immigrants do not fear coming forward. In fact, they do so readily because they know of people who are committing crimes and they want them removed if they are illegal.
Mm.
So, and in Boston, the neighborhood that has had the least growth in crime reporting actually is Charlestown, and that's, you know, where there are the least number of immigrants.
But I'm not sure if we can necessarily say that that's a direct correlation to secure communities, though.
No, I mean, it's not. But if there were this so-called chilling effect happening, I think we would see it in the crime reporting statistics. And some other studies have been done on this nationwide that show that it just isn't happening. I think it's, you know, what's unfortunate is that organizations are actually putting that fear out there. It's not based on experience with the program. It's, you know, if people are afraid to go to the police, it's for a lot of other reasons.
Jessica Vaughn, hang in there because we've got a lot of listeners who want to join this conversation. We are talking about the Secure Communities Program. It's a federal program that sends fingerprints collected at the state and local level to federal immigration and customs enforcement that has led to, since its launch in 2008 nationwide, the deportation of over 100,000 people from the United States. What are your thoughts about whether or not Massachusetts should participate in this program and the merits of secure communities? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Bob is calling from Revere. Welcome to Radio Boston, Bob.
Hi. I'm worried about the potential for overreach with this program. It sounds to me like this is, I mean, you always hear about in the 90s right-wing conspiracy theorists talking about how the government had some central database of everybody on everything, and it's just chilling to think that this is the first step towards the realization of what once would be, you know, the realm of, you know, kooks who thought we didn't land on the moon. I'm just wondering, is this a step towards de facto federal policing at the local level?
Bob, thank you so much for your call. Laura Rodolo, staff attorney with the ACLU of Massachusetts, your thoughts on that?
This is definitely something that we're very much concerned about at the ACLU. We've seen the kind of the issue that you're talking about with the Social Security database, where there are massive, massive error rates, where U.S. citizens are getting denied the ability to work, for example. And we're very much concerned that immigration is now just gathering fingerprints of everyone in the country. And like I said, Boston alone has sent over 45,000 fingerprints of mostly U.S. citizens to this large ICE database.
Jessica Vaughn, do you share that same concern that just the sheer information collecting is a problem?
Well, no. I mean, I think that, you know, what we have to remember that with secure communities, what we're talking about is people who get arrested and those are the ones whose fingerprints are being bounced off of the FBI and DHS databases. And I personally would rather have that process apply to everyone who's arrested equally, no matter, you know, what language they speak or how they dress or whatever, rather than the situation that exists now that Laura described, where individual police officers have to make a judgment call on whether or not they're going to call ICE. I think that is potentially much more troubling in terms of possible racial profiling or abuse of authority than having this, you know, more equal approach that secure communities offers.
Let's take another call from Arlington. Richard is on the line. You're on the air, Richard.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. It feels to me like we're really mixing things up here. Law enforcement is law enforcement, and certainly immigration is part of that. We're mixing up this issue of whether we take fingerprints and report them to all law enforcement with all of the myriad problems we have with immigration enforcement at all. Immigration is a completely broken system, but to mix up, is this person an illegal, with is this person breaking the law, and how many ways is the person breaking the law, is the wrong thing to do. It seems like this shouldn't even be a program per se. We should just be doing it, and at the same time, fixing all the problems with immigration and with all the other law enforcement problems that we have.
So, Richard, I hear your call for comprehensive immigration reform. Many people would agree with you on that one, but I'm not clear on what you mean that we should just be doing it. That seems to be the intent of the Secure Communities program.
It seems to me that the intent of the program is to improve law enforcement. So if somebody is arrested for some reason and has their fingerprints taken, we should be able to look them up and say, in how many ways is this person currently wanted for breaking the law? And immigration is only one of those ways.
Mm-hmm. Richard, thank you so much for your call. I want to just take a moment to introduce one more quick voice into this conversation, and that is Representative Betty Poyer. I'm so sorry, Representative, if I pronounced your name incorrectly, but you are Republican State Representative of North Attleboro. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to join you.
Can you be sure to just correct me on exactly how you say your last name?
Yes, it's Poirier.
Poirier, okay. As with a name like mine, Chakrabarty, I try to get it right, so sometimes I screw
you.
It up. But we're delighted to have you today because the Republican representatives on Beacon Hill just sent an open letter to Governor Deval Patrick today pointing out how much money in particular Massachusetts is spending incarcerating illegal immigrants. Tell us what you're arguing in the letter on this particular point.
Yes, I'm very happy to. Yes, I hand-delivered the letter to Governor Patrick this afternoon, and it was signed by myself and every member of the Republican caucus. You may know that we had an amendment attached to the budget, which we debated this particular issue, and it only lost by 11 votes. So we had a great deal of support from across the aisle on this issue. And we feel as though Governor Patrick should really be more concerned about the people who are hardworking taxpaying citizens on the street and in the neighborhoods, and should be very willing to join this program immediately so that we can get these heinous criminals off the street.
Well, if I understand correctly, in the letter you specifically say that Massachusetts would save tens of millions of dollars if those who are known to be illegal immigrants who are currently in state jails were deported through the Secure Communities program.
The figures we have from 2008 show that there were 806 illegal immigrants in Massachusetts in correctional institutions at a cost of approximately $46,000 an inmate, and that amounts to over $30 million. And we know that Commissioner Davis from Boston and others who are already adopting the principles of this program have endorsed it wholeheartedly and have urged the governor to join the program sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm.
Mayor Menino is one of those who has urged the governor to join the program. And it is my understanding that the figures are a little different from what I've heard you discuss. 70% of those reported are criminals of the worst type.
Mm.
And should be deported. There is absolutely no reason why our tax dollars should be going to support them in our correctional institutions when they could be spent on so many of the other programs that our needy citizens require. And
Representative Poirier,
I'm careful how we spend our taxpayer dollars.
I'm very sorry to cut you off, but I do thank you for joining us today. We're running out of time here, and I just want to get some responses from our other guest. That's Representative Betty Poirier. Thank you so much for joining us. Laura Rodolo with the ACLU of Massachusetts. There you heard an economic argument in support of secure communities. But overall, I'm wondering from you, if indeed what we've heard this week from the federal government, that this plan is going ahead, it is going to be rolled out nationwide by 2013, what option do you think, can be taken? It doesn't seem like this can be stopped.
I think there are a couple of challenges. First, of course, there's a legal challenge that, attorneys around the country are working on. Part of this is a cost argument. It does cost the state a little bit of money when it has to hold people for ICE to come and get them. So there is a time there that they have to be in our local jails. There is a cost argument there. But it's also a political issue. Whether or not we can challenge this law in a court, it's a political program. It's not a done deal. Congress authorized money to do this for actual criminals, and what's happening is that it's deporting lots of people have not been convicted of a crime. And I think that it's really a political issue where if enough states stand up and say no to it, the Obama administration really is going to have to take a second look at it.
Jessica Vaughn, last question goes to you. We heard our reporter Bianca Bosquez-Tonis at the top of this segment say that there's enough concern about this program as it stands that even ICE and Department of Homeland Security itself is looking at secure communities and looking to to modify it maybe so that it catches, you know, fewer people get deported who maybe, you know, could have alternative proceedings here in the United States. Would you accept such modifications if they did come out of the federal level?
Well, there have already been modifications. For example, DHS has modified it so that people involved in domestic violence cases get special treatment. And I fully expect that there will be a look at this issue of who exactly is being picked up. But from the numbers that I have seen, I think that people are going to agree that those who end up getting removed or charged under secure communities are people who are a problem in their communities and also happen to be here in defiance of our immigration laws, and that those should be the highest priority for immigration law enforcement.
That's Jessica Vaughn, Director of Policy Studies at the Center for Immigration Studies. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Laura Rodolo, staff attorney for the ACLU of Massachusetts, thank you as well for your time.
Thank you so much.
Listeners, you can always continue this conversation on our website, and I do hope you do. We're at radioboston.org. Stay with us because up next, sports and hockey with Bill Littlefield. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.